I've gambled down in Washington, and I've gambled up in Maine. I'm going down into Georgia to knock down my last game. I'm a gambling man, man, man. I'm a gambling man.
What did you gamble on?
I gambled on sports, but I will tell you this. You should never bet football because the ball ain't round. I keep telling people this. And so the ball hits, and then it does all kinds of crazy things, and you don't know.
A Supreme Court decision today gives states the go-ahead to legalize betting on sports. The High Court struck down the federal law that banned gambling on football, basketball, baseball, and other sports in most states. The American Gaming Association estimates Americans illegally wager around $150 billion on sports each year.
So, listener, legalized gambling. What do we think about it? That's the topic of the Sharon Hour, just starting with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 935. It's very similar to legalizing drugs. You take the big bucks away from the underworld, and the government makes all those billions of dollars to spend on things for the public good. But is it too paternalistic to say the government should be protecting us from ourselves and our addictive behaviors? Although governments have been known to be exploitative too.
Governments say they promote responsible gambling, but do they really?
There's no doubt that they exploit addicted gamblers. It's their stock and trade.
15% to 50% of gambling revenue comes from problem gamblers.
We all know when it comes to gambling, the house always wins. But the dirty little secret is just how much government-run casinos rely on problem gamblers.
What are the odds of winning in this game?
The odds of you winning something are really good. About half the time or a third of the time, you're going to win something.
I would have thought the odds would have been lower.
Yeah, well, what happens is that a lot of those wins, about half of them, are actually losses. So you're wagering, let's say, 20 cents, and you're winning 8 cents. So you have a loss of 12 cents, but it flashes and makes sounds as if you've won.
So it's a loss disguised as a win.
Correct.
And as long as my body interprets that I'm winning, I keep playing?
Yep.
You put down $25,000. Maybe lose $25,000 to win three.
Yeah, but I won three.
That was Norm MacDonald, the comedian from Saturday Night Live, who's quite a renowned gambler.
A friend of mine is very smart, said, I've been very lucky with gambling. I've never won. And it was a very profound thing, you know what I mean? Because if you never win, you don't get hooked.
Profound on many levels. One hears a lot of gamblers gamble not to win, but to lose. Gambling is my topic on tonight's KX 935's The Sharon Hour. And here, via the publication Psychology Today, are a few of the psychologists' myths and erroneous beliefs surrounding gambling. There's the idea, for instance, that being in a good mood can actually inspire gambling, because a positive mood leads to more risk-taking. Whether the reverse is true is in itself questionable, because it's certainly not going to sustain that good mood or put you in a better one if you lose. There's a psychological process known as the gambler's fallacy. Let's say you're playing roulette and you see 7 black numbers come up in a row. A gambler is liable to put all his or her money on red, under the mistaken impression that if an event happens repeatedly, there's likely to be a different event imminently. And there's actually no rationale whatsoever for that. In reality, the odds of any particular event occurring are always the same. Racetrack bettors were asked to estimate the odds that their favoured horse would win, both before and after betting on the horse. After placing their bets, gamblers tended to believe that their horse had a greater chance of winning than before they bet. The increased commitment caused them to be more hopeful. And then there's the bandwagon effect. When lottery jackpots reach record levels and get all that media attention, everyone races out to buy them. There's a frenzy of ticket buying because people don't want to be left out. Even people who've never played the lottery before will jump on the bandwagon and purchase tickets. The thing is, gambling by its very definition is a random event that defies any particular system to win. Even if many gamblers think they've come up with a system. Obviously, you can vary the odds. I used to bet on the horses in England, And I learned that it was the rider-jockey-trainer combo that told you more about their chances than anything else. So I was maybe one step ahead, and obviously if you know sports players and their track records, you're going to be one step ahead of people that know nothing. But then randomness comes into play. There are no patterns in random numbers. There just aren't. So trying to select hot slot machines and avoid cold ones, i.e. continuing to play a machine that hasn't paid off in a long time. A machine is considered hot if it hasn't paid off in a long time, and that makes some people think that it's due to pay off. Wrong. Or performing some ritualistic behavior in order to keep getting wins is sheer superstition. And if you're superstitious, you believe that you can put some self-actuating thought out there and the universe will deliver. And maybe that's possible, but it is a superstition. So playing slot machines with your talisman might not help as much as performing any other task with a confidence-building talisman. And the downside, of course, is talisman or not, gambling is very addictive. And if you train yourself to buy into these superstitions, you're just going to get more addicted. So at least be aware of the fallacies and myths and psychological dangers surrounding this sport. You're tuned to The Share Now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My topic tonight is gambling. Addictive gambling seems largely the domain of men, except if you've ever been to a casino, you will have passed the banks of ladies sitting at slot machines, shoveling in those coins for hours on end.
Unlike horse races or card games, bets on a slot machine come fast and furiously. The industry average is about 1,000 spins an hour.
There is something mesmerizing about this.
Studies suggest the rapid-fire gambling increases the onset of addiction. Even the illusion of winning gives players a blast of dopamine, like a chemical jackpot for the brain.
I'm feeling like a winner. If I didn't see what my credits were, am I up or am I down? I would tell you I'm way up.
Like one gambler said, if I keep on winning, I'm going to go broke.
Gamblers may see these as games of chance, but insiders say they've been designed to reduce the chance of winning the longer gamblers play.
So the casino wins, then the house wins on two fronts. They've taken all my money that I've put into this machine, and they've increased the likelihood that I'm going to come back and do it again.
Correct.
Some compare these machines to crack cocaine, others to cigarettes, both highly addictive by design.
I heard one game designer talk about the math that he was designing, and he was drawing some graphs for me. He's like, this is what an old slot machine looked like. Big valleys and peaks, spike, really spiky. This is what our new machines look like. And he drew this slow curve. He said, we want people to recline on our algorithms the way you recline on a comfortable couch.
But the line is eventually heading down.
It's all about slowly eroding, nibbling away at your budget until you reach zero. So this is discussed as giving gamblers a smoother ride, a ride to where? A ride to zero. A ride on that graph down to the moment when you can't play anymore, which is often called the moment of extinction.
Joe is a gambling addict.
It's an addiction that's very quiet. In other words, you'll never know if somebody has a gambling problem.
Joe knew he was past the point of extinction. His gambling debts were slowly killing him.
How much money do you think you've lost gambling?
I had estimated a short time ago, I would say anywhere between $2 and $3 million.
And how much money do you owe today?
Probably between family, about $1.5 million.
Between family,
loan sharks,
bookmakers.
Yes, correct.
That's a deep hole, Joe.
Yeah.
And it all started so harmlessly. Joe's childhood defined by family, church, school, and sports.
I innocently liked to play cards. We'd get together as family and play on Christmas, you know, and we'd play cards for a few hours to pass the time.
As Joe grew older, the stakes grew higher. He was soon gambling every day, and the casinos wanted his business, sending him promotional flyers and coupons, urging him to keep coming back.
At what point was it when you realized that you'd crossed that line? And
probably
you were
in early to mid-20s, because I'd already at that point received a few bailouts from my family.
Joe's weakness? Electronic gaming machines, or EGMs, like slots and video poker. Author and academic Natasha Schull says these machines have a corrosive effect on all gamblers, not just addicts, designed with sophisticated algorithms to separate you from your money.
What I found, I actually find more sinister, which is that people are not trying to create addicts, they're trying to increase revenue. And a kind of collateral damage is that they create addicts.
Success is measured not only by revenue, but by the time gamblers spend on these machines. It's known as TOD, or time on device, where gamblers are lulled into a trance-like escape from life and loss.
I kept hearing this word, you know, I'm in the zone, I go into the machine zone. And the machine zone they described was a kind of state that's outside of time and outside of space, where monetary value falls away. You're just in a flow. You lose track of even yourself.
Do you want problem gamblers in your casinos?
We do not want problem gamblers in our casinos. We need people who can play today, tomorrow, next year, and 5 years from now.
So how do you keep them playing safely? Make sure they don't reach that moment of extinction.
Thrilling games. Delicious food.
And it's gratis, the government in Canada. The OLG, which stands for the Ontario Lottery and Gaming Corporation, is the government-run organization that brings legal gambling to a casino near you. Gambling is the topic of my Sharon Hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. In Canada, where gambling is legal, the government-run OLG insists that they have their customers, the casino gamblers' welfare, at heart, as well as their own financial benefit. But do they really? Since we in the US have just lifted the ban on illegal gambling in most states, this will be interesting for us to know.
OLG is the biggest provincial gaming corporation in Canada, with more than 18,000 employees, generating $7.5 billion in gross revenues for a deficit-ridden government. But ever wonder who is anteing up that cash? Robert Williams is a professor at the University of Lethbridge in Alberta. He's an expert in gambling research.
Depending on the jurisdiction and the time period, between 15 to 50% of gambling revenue comes from problem gamblers. If your revenue base is hinged on drawing a good portion of your money from an addicted population, that's a problematic business enterprise if you're just in private business, let alone government.
Consider this. In 2016, the Alberta government made more money from gambling than it did from oil and gas revenues. Because this is a business that's all boom, no bust. In the past 20 years, gaming revenues in Canada have quadrupled, much of it pure profit for governments.
So what about the addicted gamblers like Joe, who have basically lost not just their shirts, but their house, home, family, wife, children, everything, because of their gambling habit? Is the government going to look after him? Not likely.
You need to be protected from yourself.
In this case, I couldn't do it on my own anymore, as I was trying.
Joe had an idea. He could ban himself from the casinos. It's a program called self-exclusion, facial recognition software. It's supposed to keep banned gamblers out.
Once they're isolated and identified via the cameras at the fixed entrances, for example, the alerts are sent to the operator, at which time the operator can make an informed decision on the self-excluded individual as to next steps.
But does this high-tech security system really work? We went undercover to find out.
And talked to a guy named Pelizzari at this Canadian government-run gaming organization, the OLG. Quick reminder that you're tuned to The Sharer now with me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935, talking about gambling tonight. And quoting from a Canadian documentary on gambling and gambling addiction in a country where gambling is legal, as it's about to be in most of the United States.
Pelizzari shows me how the OLG is giving players the option to limit the amount of time and money they spend on slots. It's kind of like a casino nanny cam.
Informed decision-making, building for players' internal self-controls, that over the long term is what leads to healthier play.
The OLG spends about $50 million a year on problem gamblers for research, awareness, and treatment. Joe benefited from that program. He received gambling counseling paid for by the OLG. He also signed an agreement with OLG to voluntarily ban himself from their casinos. They call the program self-exclusion. But Joe says none of that stopped him from playing whenever he got the itch.
I just started all over again. You know, I was cashing my paychecks, taking it there. Starting to borrow from banks, starting to borrow from loan sharks again.
But you're on the self-exclusion list.
I still am, yeah. Yeah.
And nobody is stopping
you? Nobody's stopping me.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Pelizzari says the OLG has built a better firewall to keep self-excluders out, spending $500,000 on facial recognition software.
And if they are detected?
If they are detected, then a staff member very discreetly goes over, talks to the person, probably pulls them away from the gaming floor, determines that they are who we think that they are in terms of the self-exclusion program, and then we discreetly remove them from the property.
So, does the high-tech detection system really work? Well, we decided to put it to the test. Our producer put himself on the self-exclusion list. OLG took his picture and his personal information. A week later, we sent him out on a mission. Could he walk into an OLG casino and play? Or would the state-of-the-art cameras catch him? First attempt, he walks past the security guard and the cameras and into the casino. He plays the slots, then cashes out and exits. Well, maybe it was beginner's luck. So we make a second attempt an hour later.
At a different casino.
The slots at Mohawk Racetrack.
How are you?
Once again, he gets a polite welcome, then sits down and plays. He decides to push his luck and heads to Casino Niagara. New location, same warm welcome, and no one stops him from playing. Shortly after, we make a fourth and final attempt. Well, it's four of a kind. Our so-called self-excluded gambler has beaten the house time and time again.
Jackpot!
We showed the video to Paul Pelizzari.
How do you explain why our producer got into four different properties and was never detected?
We provide supports to detect self-excluders.
But you have facial recognition.
No one element of the program is designed to be foolproof.
But four out of four?
We detect over 3,000 people every year. We've improved that number. It is one support that we provide. We're going to look at how we can improve it. But the important point is to not characterize it as a policing program, because that's a disservice to gamblers.
It's not so easy. It gets so complicated, all the things you gotta be. And when I'm about to fall, somehow you're always waiting with your open arms to catch me. You're gonna save me from myself, from myself, yes. You're gonna save me from myself. Ooh, oh yeah. I know it's crazy. Well, some guys have shown me aces, but you got that royal flush every day. Well, tomorrow may be shaky, but you never turn away. And don't ask me why I'm crying, 'cause when I start to crumble, you know how to keep me smiling. You're gonna save me from myself, from myself, myself. You're gonna save me from myself. I know it's hard, it's hard, but you've broken all my walls. You're gonna save me from myself, to myself, myself. You're gonna save me from myself.
But is this government-run nanny program by a huge government-run casino operation really going to save you from yourself and gambling away all your assets and relationships? Gambling is the topic of my Sharon Hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. By the way, do know that if you tune into our radio station, we do give regular updates on what's going on in the community and safety and all of that. You may be able to get that on your apps like Alert OC and Nixie, but there are many areas in Laguna where cell phones don't work and our radio waves do. So do stay tuned to KX935. Back to my discussion on gambling and whether it should be run by a nanny state, which at least gives the revenue back to us as citizens, or should it stay underground with no pretenses to serving the community? Seems there's a built-in conflict of interest for anyone who controls gambling.
Author Natasha Shule says self-policing isn't an addict's strong suit. That's the weakness, she says, of responsible gambling programs.
But it is also a concerted public relations campaign that deflects attention away from problematic products and industries and puts it all on the person. You manage yourself.
So is there a better way to weed out self-excluded gamblers? Why not simply ask them to show ID at the door?
Most countries in the world, you got to show any government ID to get in a casino. There's no long lineup. You can automate it by just scanning it. You know, Disneyland does that with thumbprints. There's lots of automated ways to have a more reliable detection system. It's just North American casinos have been reluctant to do it.
They're choosing not to do it.
They're choosing not to do it. It's a fair characterization.
But there is one policy the OLG enforces rigorously. If you're self-excluded and you win big, you're out of luck. So gamblers on the banned list are free to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in the casino. But the minute they win a jackpot of more than $10,000, casino reps won't pay them out. No, they'll kick them out of the casino.
You understand the optics here, that if I'm self-excluded, I can lose, give you thousands and thousands of dollars, which you will freely take. But the minute I ask for my winnings back, you're saying, no, sorry.
They've made a commitment to themselves to stay away from the property. They know that it's on them to not come back to the casino and that these things are in place to remove them.
OLG has settled at least 18 cases out of court, paying off the problem gamblers, who then sign an agreement to ensure everyone keeps quiet about it. Sean Dewart has taken on more than a dozen of these cases.
I mean, now everyone who participates in the self-exclusion program learns pretty early on that it's a joke and that this piece of paper they've signed means absolutely nothing, and they are free to go back in and indulge in their addictive behavior.
Do you think OLG knows that this is a toothless policy?
There's no doubt in my mind that OLG knows this is a toothless policy, because OLG hasn't really done anything to give it any teeth.
Pellizzari won't explain why the OLG settles with the problem gamblers.
I can confirm that there have been lawsuits in multiple jurisdictions, including Ontario. We're obliged to respect confidentiality in these matters.
Dewart has a simple, albeit cynical, explanation about why OLG settles.
For one thing, they frequently get the money back, which is to say that there's a settlement, it ends up in my client's pocket, and my clients do what all addicts do, which is they go right back into a casino. So in some cases, I'm quite sure OLG is cognizant of the fact that the money's just going to go in a circle.
And the circle of publicity keeps spinning, like the numbers on the slot machine. Last year, the OLG spent $333 million on marketing and promotion, urging gamblers to come early and come often. Across Canada, governments, it's estimated, spend close to $500 million a year promoting gambling with ads like these.
The only thing missing is you. We're all play.
While at the same time banning ads for smoking and drinking. As for Joe, whether you sympathize with him or not, don't tell him fun wins every time. He's more than $1 million in debt, and the loan sharks are circling.
Do you fear for your life?
No? I do. I do, yeah. Every day I do. But it's just something I have to deal with.
How are you going to get out of that hole?
I don't know. I'm just fighting now to... I mean, I'm basically fighting just to try to make ends meet. It's just, it's never enough. And it always puts me back in the thinking of maybe I can go back to gambling to win, to have that big score, to help me with this at least. You know what, I might not be able to save myself in the end, but I just want to save somebody who, you know what, as a teenager could wander into these places or get, you know, manipulated. So I just want to save somebody.
Every little boy and girl to earn as much as they can possibly, then turn around and spend it foolishly. We created us a credit card mess. We spend the money that we don't possess. Our religion is to go and blow it all. So it's shopping every Sunday at the mall. All we ever want is more.
a lot more than we had before. So take me to the nearest store. Can you hear it ring? It makes you wanna sing. It's such a beautiful thing. It's yeah, yeah, lots of diamond rings. The happiness it brings. You live like a king with lots of money and things. When you're broke, go and get a loan. Take out another mortgage on your home. Consolidate so you can afford to go and spend some more when you get bored. All we ever want is more. A lot more than we had before. So take me to the nearest store. Can you hear it ring? It makes you wanna sing. It's such a beautiful thing. Let's swing. Dig deeper in your pocket. Oh. Yeah. Come on, I know you got it. Dig deeper in your wallet. Oh, all we ever want is more. I love more. So take me to the nearest store. Can you hear it ring? It makes you wanna sing. It's such a beautiful thing. Yeah, lots of diamond rings. The happiness it brings. You live like a king with lots of money and things. Can you hear?
I did go broke twice, and I must say that it was a very cleansing feeling in a way.
Cleansing?
Yeah.
Well, when you went broke, you had to make money again because you had to go broke twice.
That's
Why did
true.
You go back to gambling after you made money knowing that you went broke?
So I was a casual gambler, go and bet $25 on blackjack, but I had a big win. I hit a craps table, I went on a gigantic run, won, you know, six figures, and ever since then, you can't go back. If you win that much money, you can't go back to $25
bets. Over $100,000.
Yeah, just over. Just
Did
over.
You get a little nervous walking out with the cash?
I was afraid. I didn't know you were allowed to win that much. So at the craps table, I kept putting the chips in my pocket, you know, because this guy was rolling for, I don't know the game. And I put money down, and then I only had $100. I just put it down, and then I won. And the guy said, you want to press it? And then I didn't want to look stupid. I go, what do you think? So the guy pressed it. He pressed every bet. All of a sudden, they were just handing me huge amounts of money. I got scared. I started pocketing it. I remember at the end, I go, man, I must have won $15,000. And the guy goes, you won a hell of a lot more than that, fella. And it was Atlantic City. They don't escort you to your car or anything
Vegas
like that.
They do.
Yeah, you just drive into hell. When you get out of that casino, just every sign says, we'll buy your, you know, your gold from your teeth. You know, this is horrible.
Now, I guess I've known you, I don't know, for a little while now,
yeah.
And you've come on the show a bunch of times. I was kind of surprised because someone told me that you, Norm MacDonald, has gotten kind of superstitious. And I thought, that's odd, because I don't think of you as that kind of person.
I never was. I was always a doubting Thomas. I couldn't think of the name. I was always a doubting, I was going to say Fred. You know, I was always, nah, that stuff, that's not true. That's a load of stuff. But then I had this thing, you wouldn't believe it. You know, I opened my eyes and made a believer out of me. What happened was I had a dream, and it was like the number 7 in my dream. a giant number seven. The most vivid dream I ever had. So I wake up from the dream, right? From this number seven, I look over at my clock, 7 o'clock.
Wow.
So I get up. It's not that coincidental.
No, I'm just sort of going along with
you. Yeah. So then I go out and I decide, hey, why don't I take a cab, you know? So I get in the cab, and it's cab number seven, I notice, when I'm in the cab. Now I'm starting to get a little freaked out, you know? And so I say, hey, take me to the track. I enjoy playing the ponies, you know?
Sure.
I mean? I like going down there visiting my money. So I go to the track, you know, and I say, okay, what do I owe you there, fella? He says, $7.77. I said, good Lord. I said, I thought it was like 40 cents. Anyways, I go, here you go. I pay him, give him like $8. You know? So I walk through gate seven, ticket window number seven there at the horse place, you know? And I look up, they have the form there, you know, the racing form shows you all the races. So I look and I see in the seventh race, there's a horse called Lucky Seven, and he pays 77-1, you know?
No.
So I say, to hell with this. I say, I'm going to pull out all my money. I pull out all my money. I had like $700. Pull it out. I said, put this all on Lucky Seventh and a Seventh, you know? I go watch the race. Damn if he didn't come in seventh.
The comedian Norm Macdonald, best known from Saturday Night Live, is, being a comedian, always able to make a joke. But it was no joke for him, his gambling addiction. He pretty much lost everything he'd ever made. Gambling is the topic of my share in Hour Tonight. That's for me, Sharon James, on Lagunas KX935. Here's Norm on a couple of talk shows, first with David Letterman and George Lopez, then with Howard Stern, who is uncharacteristically puritanical on the subject.
Do you still gamble? Somebody told me that you... Did we know that...
Yeah, I used to gamble.
You don't gamble anymore?
No, I don't gamble anymore.
Was it a problem? Did it get to be a problem?
Yeah, it got to be a problem, man. And then I tried to do it smart. Every time I tried to do it smart, a bad thing would happen.
Like, what do you mean?
Well, one time I was trying to handicap baseball, you know, which you can actually beat baseball if you handicap it properly. So I was trying to handicap, and I figured it out for like 3 hours, and I went down to the book in Mirage, a sports book, went up to the fella, you know, and there was a guy beside me, big fat guy, you know, and he's dressed like real rich, you know, and he opened a big attaché case filled with $10,000 chips, pulls out like $750,000, and he's going to bet on this boxer, you know, a fighter. And it was a 4-1 underdog. So I said, I'm not going to bet my baseball bet. I'll just bet on this 4-1 underdog.
Huh? Must know.
Yeah, because this guy must know something. He's probably in the mafia. So I go and watch the boxing match, Dave. And the guy, my guy that I bet on, gets knocked out in 25 seconds.
Whoa. Yeah.
So I go back to the book. I go, what, that guy from the mafia? What? He goes, that guy's not from the mafia. He goes, that's old long shot Louie. He goes, he's a rich guy. He loves long shots.
Well, there's just no winning, is there?
No, there's no winning. Nobody ever wins. Ever.
Hey, so I was at the fight. I was at the Pacquiao.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I almost made a bet.
Yeah.
I almost made a bet that it would go the distance in Mosley's favor. Almost. But I was a little bit afraid. Tell everybody what your bet was, Norm.
I bet Pacquiao to win. $25,000 to win $3,000.
Wait a minute. How is that possible? Was it that it would a knockout or what was the actual bet?
No, it's just that he would win. But I got scared because like I was so happy when Mosley went down, and then all of a sudden he got up, and then I was scared because you know one punch can end it at any moment. No, that's the most money I ever put on a fight, and also I don't know nothing about boxing.
What did you go by, the commercials or his karaoke singing, or how did you pick Pacquiao?
Well, usually I kind of went against my instincts on this one because usually I pick the bigger guy. But in this instance, I met him, Pacquiao, and he seemed unbeatable.
He
you know,
is.
Pound for pound.
Now, have you ever been devastated and lost like a big bet?
I've lost everything I own 3 times.
Tapped out?
Yeah. That happened to me 3 times. But since, I've gotten control of it since. See, actually, after you lose everything, sometimes you kind of feel good. It's odd. But you feel like clean. You go, hey, man, I feel all right, you know? But but one time I had nothing left, and I went up to my room, and I was like, I walked by the Coca-Cola machine. I love Coca-Cola. You know?
Yeah.
So I said, I'm going to have a frosty Coca-Cola, you know? But I only had 65 cents to my name, right? And it costs a dollar. So I hatch this plan. I'll go down to the nickel slots, and I'll make myself a dollar. So I go down there with my 65 cents. I'm putting in nickels, and it took an hour and a half, and I get up to 95 cents 8 times. And I never broke a dollar. And then later I thought, I think they would have given me a free drink.
It was, you know, the cocktails.
That's, by the way, how you know you're, when you have a gambling problem, is when the guys start giving you things. Like, because when you first go, you're like, hey, man, the pit boss just offered me some free meat. That's a nice fella, you know? And then you realize he's only doing it because you're a sap. But, man, I would go in, I'd bet so much money. At the end of the thing, the guy would be like, you want some meat, anything to keep me in the casino? Hey, some beef. Hey, I want to have sex with my wife. Anything, you know?
What was your biggest loss?
Do you talk about it?
Nah.
Not really, huh?
Nah. It was a lot.
I did a stupid thing one time.
He's ready to talk.
Yeah, this was my big statement I threw on the boardwalk over at Atlantic City. I threw $60,000 into the ocean.
What? No way.
Yeah, to quit. That was my thing. I'm going to quit.
Why didn't you just quit and keep the 60?
It was supposed to be like, I felt like I was in a movie.
A symbolic kind of a thing. Like, was it money or chips?
No, it was money.
That? It was money?
So you threw 60 grand, because you had a moment where you're like, this is cleansing, this is the ocean.
The same way a drug addict would throw his drugs into the ocean.
It's a weird syndrome, but it exists that a lot of gamblers gamble to lose and not to win. Gambling is the topic on my KX935's The Sharon Hour tonight.
I stumped a psychiatrist once. He said, you're using gambling, you're using, you're fixating on gambling in order to escape your real thoughts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, isn't that why you do everything in life? And literally, I stumped him.
He had no answer.
He was like, "Ah," and then he recovered and tried to make it. But isn't that why you do everything?
Yes.
So you're not sitting at home
just thinking.
Thinking about what's really going to happen to us?
Where it all ends?
Why would you play poker at an underground club when you could go to, let's say, Vegas or Atlantic City and play poker? Why would you go underground? What is the appeal?
Because I was only a little kid. I was just a kid.
Oh, you were a kid.
Well, no, but one is two blocks away in Manhattan. Yeah. The second time I was on your show ever with Norm, we were in one of those clubs all night long. And we came right from the club.
Did you lose a lot of money?
I lost all my money immediately.
But Norm, I don't understand something. You go to these underground clubs and you play these cards, and it's a lot of money. You're talking about a couple of grand, right? You're talking about maybe
I lost
20, a couple
grand.
Of grand.
You're talking
got 160 million.
I got news for you.
It's like 2 grand.
I wouldn't gamble $100.
Yeah, but he's not a gambler. I've seen Howard get mad over $10.
I don't like to gamble. I find it insulting. That, in other words, I find making money is a very, especially where I grew up, is a very hard thing for a lot of people. And it's a tough thing. And to just piss it away in a gambling situation.
My old man felt the same
offends
way.
Offends me.
My father would think that too.
Right. But you play for big bucks, right? I mean, no, 20,
I'm
30 grand
right.
a clip,
I'm
right?
I tried my best. 3 times I've lost everything that I've ever had.
How do you do that? I mean, not morally, but I mean, like, how do you
physically do it?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, you make one more. Like, what is the process of that? What's the evolution?
You just lose it by it's just like any escape, I guess. Because I was never a drug or alcohol guy. But like when I watch a game and I have a bunch of money on it, then I can understand what's going on. Nothing's ambivalent or anything about it. You know, there's stakes. You know exactly the rules. You're completely involved and you're completely escaped from your life. The real fear. My biggest problem is ruminating about death. If I could get over that somehow.
And you do that regularly?
I try to. I read books about it.
So, like, you still haven't walked me through losing everything.
Well, how you do it?
I mean, because you've got a house, you had a lot of money saved up, and then, like, so you make one bet, and then you realize you're about to lose everything. Do you make phone calls to people saying, I just need a little more? I mean...
Well, you know, you kind of, at the end of it, you know it's happening. It's, I guess it's like, I've never had substance abuse problems, but I guess it's like people that know they're going to hit bottom and kind of want it, because it does get, it's exhausting to be obsessed with something. So you are, I guess, trying to finish it off, finally.
Right.
If you have $450,000 in the bank, whatever it was, and then you lose $400,000, you go, I don't want to have $50,000. to remind me that I don't want money to remind me that I have more money.
So that's how you do it.
So that's how you do it. Yeah.
Everything's relative, right? When you've known a lot of money or can envision what you can do with a lot of money, a relatively small amount of money seems like a tease. And that's what gets gamblers losing small to win big, but ending up losing everything. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My topic on tonight's show is gambling, and some years ago, the English newspapers were full of a story of a man who'd lost around £750,000. That was well over $1 million at that time. This wasn't exactly an affordable sum for a man who was a major in the British Army, not known as the highest paid of professions. Along with his financial losses, this person lost his wife, his family, his children, his home, and his job.
And that person was me. I want to ask why. And I've asked myself that question so many times. Was there a time bomb inside me just ticking away? Was it something that happened because of the circumstances? Well, I want to share my story with you, and I'll let you decide. My life was good. I joined the army. I spent 8.5 years there. I went to Sandhurst and was awarded the Queen's Sword of Honour for graduating top of my intake. For 2 years, I was the youngest major in the British Army. I did the All-Arms Commando course. I was paratrained. I did all the fun and exciting things, and maybe there's a bit of a theme there. But I was always restless. And when someone said to me I wouldn't be promoted for another 6 years, I left the army, age 30. And I went off to seek my fortune in the city. And I left the army having led 460 men on a high-pressure operational tour to being the junior T-boy in a small insurance brokerage in Hertfordshire. But I was ambitious. And I'd stay in the office sometimes for hours after everyone else had left. And I'd sit with my books and I'd try and teach myself what I knew nothing about. And the managing director came over sometimes at 9 o'clock when he was leaving. And he'd say, "What are you doing?" And I'd say, "I want to get on. I want to catch up." 2 years later, I had been promoted to one of the youngest managing directors of a division of a global financial services company working in the City of London. I had a six-figure salary. We had nice holidays. I'd married the girl of my dreams. We drove nice cars. We had our own house together. We had a lovely son called Matthew and another one on the way. But everything was not well on the inside. A few things began to happen round about the time when I'd kind of thought I'd got everything that I could ever want in life. I had a six-hour commute. We'd moved up to Derbyshire. I travelled 3 hours down to London and 3 hours back every day, 5 days a week. But I thought that was okay because I was making money. And I felt that that was important in life. But I'd been passed over for a promotion. And I remember thinking how angry I felt at that. So I'd reached a plateau at work. Something else happened. Our lovely son, Matthew, at 11 months old, I noticed he wasn't really using his right hand at all. And I said to my wife, "Emma, don't you think it's odd he doesn't use his right hand?" She said, "Oh no, we've got left-handed people in our family who'll just be left-handed." And then I heard a radio interview about someone who'd noticed that their daughter, aged 11 months, didn't use her right hand. They'd taken her and got a diagnosis. So we took Matthew to see a consultant. And within a few minutes, the consultant said, "I believe your son has right side hemiplegia. He's got stiffness all down his right side and in his right arm. And he's got no dexterity in his hand." We had a scan and I walked into the consultant's office and saw a picture of my son's brain with a great big scar on it. I said, "What does this mean?" She said, "Your son has a form of cerebral palsy. He had a stroke when he was born, a bleed into his brain, and he'll always have limited movement down his right side." And as we got up to leave, she said, "Oh, by the way, I think maybe he's going to be susceptible to epilepsy." Just 1 week later, I was at home, it was a hot day, Matthew was in my arms, and his right arm started to jerk. I knew immediately what was happening. I just didn't know what to do. I did everything wrong. I should have just loosened off his clothing and let him come out of the fit. Took 40 minutes for the ambulance to arrive, and by then Matthew had turned blue. His lips were a dark shade of purple. I was breathing for my son, giving him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. The ambulance came, took Matthew away, and that was fine. He was okay, but I wasn't. I was completely knocked for six. I totally went into denial, and I handled it really badly. Just 1 week later, I was at home doing something I'd done 1,000 times before. I was watching a game of rugby. But this time, for the first time, I noticed one of those adverts for a £5 free bet.
A £5 bet, by the way, is equivalent to about an $8 bet. So for $8, he got himself on a path to losing a couple of $1 million. I guess any addictive behavior is triggered by an inability to cope. And it takes a lot of patience and empathy for us to realize that and not be really irritated by people that need some other substance than their own willpower to survive in the real world and go about their business and earn a living like the majority. Gambling is the topic on my Sharon Hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. I'm currently playing you via his TED Talk the story of a former major in the British Army who lost everything through his gambling habit, which all started with an online £5, quote, free bet. Nothing's free in this world, is it?
I put the £5 on for my free bet and I won. And I've asked myself so many times, what would have happened if I'd lost that bet? I'm pretty sure I'd have closed my laptop down and thought, what a waste of time. But I didn't. And do you know what? I didn't tell my wife when she came home. There was something not quite right about it. I began to watch sport a bit more. I began to read the papers, try and understand it. And at first I stuck to the things I knew, just small bets. I even worked from home and told my boss I'd just come into the office one day a week. And then boredom hit me because I'd finish my work in the morning and the rest of the day would stretch out. I began to withdraw as a husband as I gambled more. I began to withdraw as a dad. And then one day I worked out I was losing more often than I was winning. That made me cross because I'm a bad loser, but I'm competitive. I'm also very optimistic. I'm expecting to win. So I took £1,000. £1,000, I'd never bet anything like that much money before. And I placed it on the outcome of a tennis match, thinking if I won, I'd win all my money back that I'd lost and then it would be okay. I lost that bet. The first thing I did is phone my bank. I got an overdraft for another £1,000. I lost those two bets, and now there was a hole in our finances. Emma trusted me completely with our money, but rather than talk about it, tell her, or change our habits slightly, just tighten our belts on the budget, I carried on living like we always lived, spending. I didn't want people to know about my habit. I didn't want a difficult conversation. I felt ashamed. I felt guilty about what I was doing. And now, to catch up this hole, I began to bet more and more frequently. I began to spend more time. I began to spend more money. Emma thought it was her. She thought it was my job or the fact we lived in a town, and she knew how much I loved the country. So when someone offered us a good price for a house, we took it. I put the equity of the sale of our house, £170,000, into my own account. 6 weeks later, we were in a rented property where I lived. I was in the office I used, and I could see Emma coming up the lane. She had a spring in her step. She was very happy about something. She got to the window and called up. She said, "Justin, I found it. I found the perfect house. Come on, come with me." And we saw a beautiful house, but just come onto the market. That would have been perfect. A place where Emma thought she could have got me back. A place where her children would be safe, because by now little Oscar had been born as well. And then I remembered, and I desperately looked for a way out. There was a little pond in the corner, and I said to Emma, "We can't live here. Matthew might fall in and drown." You see, I'd squandered the equity from our property. There's no way I could afford the deposit. In fact, there's no way I'd have been given a mortgage, because by now, to cover up the gap, I desperately tried to borrow. You see, I thought I got myself into this mess. I'm the one that needs to get myself out of it. And I thought that I'd just keep gambling and that'll be the way through it. My own stupid pride stopped me from getting any help. And because I kept it a secret, and the problem with gambling addiction is you can keep it a secret. There's no visible signs, apart from my mood swings. Things just got worse.
Just a quick reminder here that you're tuned to the Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. My topic tonight is gambling, and you're listening to the story via his TED Talk of a British Army major whose gambling habit, starting with a, quote, free £5 bet, ended up costing him everything that mattered to him in his life.
It came to a head when one day I lost my job because I used my corporate card on my gambling account. I should have gone home and told Emma everything, but I didn't. I told her I'd left that job and gone to another one. You know, the lies that I told my wife were one of the most hurtful things, because that trust we had was so fragile, it was so precious. And she found out because we had friends to stay, and they showed her a bank statement and said, "Do you know what your husband's doing?" Even my lovely son, Matthew, one day, he just wanted me to take him to the swings. He said, "Dad, please take me to the swings." And the day that he walked, by the way, was the happiest day of our lives. And now he just wanted to spend some time with his dad. We were down at my in-law's house. It was raining. So Emma said to me, "Okay, take him, but go home first and pick up his coat." So So I drove back home and I put my hand on his coat. Matthew was asleep in the front seat, strapped in. And I remembered that night I'd put a bet on. I thought I'd just go and check. And I went upstairs and I'd lost that bet. So I went to the most horrible place you end up when you're a gambling addict. I went to the online casino. I thought I'll just have one quick spin, win that money back that I should have had in my account, and then I can go and have a good time with my son. 2.5 hours later, I'd emptied out my bank account again. I went downstairs and Matthew had cried himself to sleep, and the tears that he'd cried were dried on his cheeks. What kind of a dad does that? Only one who by now is in real problems. When Emma found out, I self-excluded myself. But there's 2,500 online gambling sites you could log into. And I got an email from another one a few weeks later to say, a £50 free bet is yours if you sign up with us. I thought, a free bet's okay, that's not really gambling. And I was right back into the way I was before. This time Emma could see. One morning I woke up and the house was quiet. She'd left and she'd taken the children with her. And do you know what? She was right to leave because I was self-destructing. And rather than go after her and plead with her to come back and tell her it would be okay, I just got angry. I sold my wedding band with a lovely verse on the inside that only we knew. Sold the Breitling watch she gave me 1 year for an anniversary. And then I took the Queen's Sword of Honor, the most precious thing I owned, and I sold it. When I'd spent the £200 in cash that I'd sold it for, and by the way, I cried when I left that shop. The next morning, I woke up and I came to my senses. I phoned up the shop and said, I've made a terrible mistake. I need to get my sword back. They said, we've just sold it. There's no record of who we sold it to. They were dark times. There were times when I think I would have taken one of two paths, either my own life or committed a serious crime. Instead, my mum came up, my brother. They knocked on the door. They'd driven all the way up from Kent. They said, you're about to be evicted. You can walk the streets or you can come back to Kent and try and find some recovery. So I walked around the house with a plastic bin liner. I put my last possessions together, some clothes, some pictures. I was completely broken, totally humiliated, but I needed to be. And with my pride broken, things got better.
He did stop gambling. He helps other addicted gamblers. His wife is back talking to him. They have a relationship, but they did get divorced. Gambling your family's future away is not conducive to staying part of a family unit, obviously. Gambling was my topic on the Sharon Hour tonight. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. That's all we have time for, but if you do want to hear the show again, you can do so on iTunes or go to kx935.com/shows/the-sharon-hour. That's sharing without the G, hour with the H. I also want to quickly mention that our last KX935 radio camp is coming up. It's an advanced camp. It runs mornings for a week from July 30th to August 3rd. Cost is $195. It's for anyone aged 12 to 18. And do visit our website for more information. That's kx935.com, which will also show you how to become a member. It'll give you all the events we have coming up and all the shows that we produce every week. Hope you enjoyed this one. It's the Sharon Hour. I'm Sharon James, and I'd love it if you come back and listen again for more conversations, thoughts, ideas, interviews on a wide variety of topics. This is Sharon James wishing you a great week ahead.